of Alcoholics Anonymous and all members of the community are welcome to attend. The single most important aspect of AA recovery, however, is the principle of one alcoholic relating to another. Therefore, only alcoholics actually participate in our meetings. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think that it would also be helpful to you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Good evening, my name is David and I am an alcoholic. Amen. Welcome to the Pacific Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. I have stated that I am an alcoholic. Are there any other alcoholics present? Good. The heart of our program is laid out in a portion of Chapter 5 of our book, Alcoholics Anonymous. To those who are new, these three pages may sound strange and unrelated to your specific problems. Do not be discouraged. Take what you can and file the rest for future reference. Tonight, I have asked Brandon D. to read Chapter 5. The format of this meeting is two 10-minute speakers and a main speaker. Our first 10-minute speaker is John G.
I'm John and I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here. It's good to be sober in our new regular meeting place, and it's a transition, but it seems to be going along well thanks to the hard work of a lot of people here like Mary and others. I won't start naming people. I named a lot too many people in the room, but I want to thank Mary for asking me to speak. It's an honor and a privilege to be asked to speak at this meeting. First time I drank, I was 15 years old. A couple of buddies and me went to a drive-in movie, and they had a fifth of Seagram's and three little Dixie cups, those little small wax Dixie cups, you know. And I said, geez, aren't we supposed to drink this with, like, ginger ale or something? And they said, no, you drink it neat. And so that may be the last time I followed direction until I came into AA. I'm not sure, but I can really remember it like it was yesterday, and remember the words of Joe, you know, Joe S. I can remember that. I don't remember the first taco I ate, though, you know, my first hot dog, but I can remember, you know, that first drink so clearly. And I was sitting in the passenger front, and Terry was driving, and Dave was in the back. Terry was this short, little skinny guy, and Dave was like, you know, 6'2", 6'3", and 250, big guy. And we were drinking away and having just a good time, you know. And he'd in the back, and he's like, okay, I'm coming up front. And we go, oh, no, you're not. And he'd throw himself forward, and we'd throw him back, and we'd be all laughing and just realize that maybe we were creating a little too much of a commotion, so we took off. And back in those days, I'm really dating myself, but back in those days, you know, they actually had the speaker that sat in the window. And so we're driving down the aisle, and I'm, hey, guys, we forgot to take the speaker out of the window, you know. And so doubly age myself, you know, I rolled down the window, I had the crank window, you know, rolled it down and tossed the speaker, and off we are. And it's kind of like really my drinking in high school. I drank, you know, a lot. My father was okay with it. God bless him. And the rule was just as long as you don't get in trouble. And I somehow was able to, adhere to that. We just did fun stuff. I mean, one time we all got together and we're all having a good time, and one of the guys made the fatal mistake of passing out. That was not a good idea. And we threw him into, they had these Goodwill boxes in the parking lots at grocery stores, and we threw him in the Goodwill box, you know. And he came out later with this old, like, zoot suit kind of thing, holding a large model of a Lincoln Continental, just clutching it to his chest. He was in love with this thing. So we, you know, packed him up in the car and drove him up, did what anybody would do, you know. Packed him up in the car and drove him back to his parents' place and propped him on the door and rang the doorbell and ran, you know. So, and yeah, and that's, you know, kind of what it was. I was born, you know, I'm a lucky guy, I admit it, you know. I mean, a lot of people have had a lot of things they've had to deal with in life, and I was given a break, and I'm very grateful for that. But in the family I was born into, from the moment I was conceived, I was going to graduate from college, you know, that's just the way it was. And so, you know, I knew I could get away with whatever I wanted. Just, I had to go to college, I had to graduate from college, and, you know, not get in trouble. And so, you know, finally, you know, took care of that and started a pattern, a serial marriage. I got, first time I got married was just as I was starting law school. And subsequently, it's become a class two misdemeanor in the state of California for John Goldman to get married. But I, it was the first of many. And, you know, it was just, you know, back when I was, you know, starting, I mean, when I was first in high school, I mean, you know, okay, I'd drink on Friday nights or something. It just kept progressing. By the time, you know, I was in law school, I was drinking every night. And I'd getting, like, snockered drunk every night, but always, you know, buzzed for sure. And I'd been a musician at one time, and, you know, I like to go around to clubs and listen to my friends play and things like that. And, you know, the first time I saw the 20 questions was back when I was about 16 or 17, and I was reading a Playboy. I read it for the articles, and they had the 20 questions in there, you know. And I'm reading this article, so I, you know, okay, I'll take the 20 questions. And I'm like 16 or 17, and these idiots, according to them, I'm an alcoholic, you know what I mean? It's just, this has got to be stupid. How could that be? Do you drink alone? Sure, if there's nobody around, I'm going to drink. I mean, for Pete's sakes. And, you know, I said at the end, this had been developed, used in AA, questions, I think, developed by John Hopkins University and used in AA to determine if you're an alcoholic or not. And I thought, oh, those AA people, man, those alcoholics, they don't want anybody to have any fun, you know? And so, anyway, I wound up graduating from law school, and it was just, you know, it was kind of odd. I was wound up marrying a flight attendant with Pan Am. She's a Brazilian woman who's a flight attendant with Pan Am, and there's nothing like waking up in a foreign country, laying flat on your back, you know, coming out of a pass out, you know, passed out, just coming to. And my guardian angel really worked overtime, because despite everybody's best efforts, I think, to lose me, I found them. And, you know, I was off and going. And, you know, same thing, more than one occasion that happened. Wound up one night, you know, things were just, man, it just kept getting worse and worse. And, you know, it was just getting worse and worse. And I had a 1970 Datsun 240Z. It was the first year they came out with them. I'd had it for a long time. I mean, this was 1984 by this point. And, you know, like the driver's seat was like caved all the way through. It was a hole that just went all the way through. And I put like phone books underneath the driver's seat so I could, you know, got an old cheap lambskin seat cover and put that over it. when it rained outside, it kind of smelled like lamb in there, you know, but I, yeah, I woke up, you know, and this one night, I was just like any other night. I mean, you know, blackout drinking. I was gone to a party with some friends who, good people, nice part of town, good people. And I was leaving that party, you know, the host of the party. I came to as I'm leaving the party. And the host of the party was just holding his head in his hands, you know. One more time, I don't know what I did. You have to ask some people who are at the meeting, but I mean, at the meeting, at the party. But one more time, I'd, you know, been obnoxious. And then, you know, drove my girlfriend home, and she's just irritating me to death. So I, she had a little baseball bat she kept by her bed for protection, and I decided to take it out on her furniture and stuff. And scared the dog so bad, it like jumped over this concrete brick wall to get away. And stormed out of there and drove home kind of blacking out, coming to, coming out. I just woke up the next morning, you know, and first it's just such a sense of relief. Like you just, you know, I don't know, get all that anger stuff out of me. I don't know, but just that first thought was just, you know, just everything felt, you know. And then 2 nanoseconds later, you know, just the physicality of it and the guilt of it and, you know, the horrible hangover and headache and guilt. And that was October 7th, 1984. That's my sobriety date. And I went and somehow got myself over to some fast food place and got like a couple large, extra large Cokes and a cheeseburger, and somehow nibbled on the cheeseburger and drank those Cokes and watched football. And I've been seeing a psychiatrist at the UCLA Neuropsychiatric Institute. It was a, I've been seeing a psychologist for all my problems. And so she said, well, I think you really suffer from, you know, severe depression. So I got you into this program and went there and saw this psychologist, and it turned out psychiatrist, and it turned out she was head of the alcoholic ward at the Veterans Hospital there on the west side. And so, you know, we had some sessions, and she said, well, you know, I think, you know, you may be an alcoholic. And I was like, I'm not an alcoholic, I just drink a lot. I mean, you know, if you could come up with something that tasted any good, but didn't have alcohol in it, hell, I'd drink it, you know, but anything that tastes good, you know, has alcohol in it. Another one of my favorites was, but you don't know the stress I'm under. I am under so much stress, you know. I have to drink like that. And so, any event, she said, well, and what happened after that morning on October 7th when I went to see her, I said, okay, I admit it, I'm an alcoholic. And she said, well, do you want to go to AA? And I said, hell no, I don't want any of that religious crap. And I don't know where I got that from. I'd never read any AA literature, never been to an AA meeting. But that was the impression I had. And so she said, well, I know this woman who's an attorney. She's been sober for a long time. And, you know, would you mind if I gave you your name and number? And I said, no, no, not at all. Well, she called me, and I knew her. You know, we'd actually practiced together when I first started. And, you know, what a miracle that was, because I trusted her, because I'd worked with her, and I saw that she was a really nice woman, smart woman, someone I could respect, and she was an AA, you know, I could trust her. And so she took me around to meetings, got me started, you know, got me introduced to some men, and off started the journey. Anyway, I'm very grateful to have been here. It's I'm grateful to be here. I'm it's a time of transition, and I'm an old fart, and I'm dealing with it the best I can, but I'm grateful that you're all here, and I'm grateful that I still get to be a part of it. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Our second tenured speaker is Hilda F.
My name is Hilda. I'm an alcoholic. Hello, Zoom. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you, Mary, for asking me, and Happy New Year. And golly, let's see. God, it's quiet in here tonight. I really like this room, though, I have to say. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I was thinking about John was a serial marrier. And I was sort of a serial get-engager, you know. I was engaged 6 times, 5 rings. And I always had a moment of clarity. You know, and one of them was the morning I was to get married, actually. I woke up, I'd been dating this fellow for about 5 years, and I woke up and I thought, good God, his last name is Hoover. I'll be Hilda Hoover. So I left. And, you know, I'm just a train wreck when I drink. I'm one of those people that, you know, basically a lying bedwetting whore when I drink. And, you know, I know that that's alcoholism because I haven't been that way lately. In fact, I've been in a monogamous relationship for 27 years. And if you're new, I probably just heard you gasp. That's not me. You know, that truly is Alcoholics Anonymous. But I'm the kind of drunk that that you lock up, you know, whether it's in jail or in mental hospitals or just about anywhere but where I am. I have a tendency when I drink, you know, I end up getting done for drunk driving, drunk and disorderly, indecent exposure, and then I move. And because it's always going to be better somewhere else. And everywhere I go, there I am, and I get done for drunk driving, drunk and disorderly, indecent exposure. And I think, you know, America was so much better. And I'd move again, you know. And I have a long list of arrests for indecent exposure. And I know I don't look the type today. Maybe a little. But something happens when you add alcohol to my type of alcoholic, and I know I'm not alone in Alcoholics Anonymous because I've heard many women in here share. But as soon as you add alcohol to my type of alcoholic, for whatever reason, I just know that you have to see my tits. And that truly is part of my alcoholism because I do not feel the need to show them to you now, right? I just don't. Not a good plan, you know. My poor mom, I'm an only child, and I will tell you, I was born in London. I forgot to mention that once when I was talking. I was in Oklahoma or somewhere, and in the thank you line, some fella came up to me and he says, "Does everybody in California talk like that?" I said, "Yes. Yes, they do." So now I like to save you wondering, you know. But my poor mom didn't know what to do with me, and you know, I ended up getting committed in mental hospitals. And in a space of 3 years, I was in and out of 5 of them. And, you know, I just didn't get it. I just didn't understand what was going on. In fact, I went AWOL from one of the mental hospitals twice to get drunk. And that's just totally disconnected when I drink, you know. And I'm unlucky. You know, I'm an unlucky drunk. So, you know, John was talking about having an angel, and I don't know, there must have been a flock of them for me, because I just ended up in places that women like me shouldn't be. You know, I was young and I was stupid, and I got arrested in foreign countries. I came out of blackout once in a jail in Tel Aviv, and I can tell you really horrible things happened to young vulnerable women who drink like I do in places like that. And you know, I got out on bail and I jumped bail, and, you know, I just put it down to bad luck. And I ended up with the wrong people in the wrong place in Egypt. And bad things happened to young, vulnerable women who drink like I do in places like that. And I ended up getting dumped in Cairo, and, you know, a big American Marine took pity on me. It was Ramadan and everything was shut, including the embassy. And him and his mates looked after me until it opened. And I got an emergency passport, and I wasn't 10 minutes in the air, and I thought, hell, they could have killed me, because I'm a goalpost drinker. I'm one of those drinkers that says, if it gets bad, I just move the goalpost back a little bit more. If it gets worse, I move that goalpost back just a little bit more. You know, I just, in the end, I think, oh, hell. And, you know, I was lucky, unlucky, I don't know. But I got arrested when I was 17 for drunk driving. And I got banned from driving for a year and sent to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went into the meeting, it was a young people's meeting, and everybody was hugging each other, and I was like, yeah, nope, I'm out. And I figured out you could sign your card. If you're new, don't do that. You can, but don't. But I went to a couple of meetings and just knew it wasn't for me, and I really forgot about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 24, and I stayed for about 3.5 years, and I sat in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous judging you. My life took off. I was a rocket to stardom in Alcoholics Anonymous. And anytime in here at all, you know who I'm talking about, right? I look good. I sound good. The jobs are getting better. It's all, my life's on fire. It's fantastic. Problem is, I'm listening to you share about doing the steps and thinking I'm really glad you have them because you're really unwell. You know, I just didn't get it. I didn't understand. I sat in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous dying of alcoholism. And I ended up, I drank for 9 months, and I was on my way to Germany, my dream job. I used to say I worked really hard for, now I know I just lied really well for. I ended up in Germany, and I got done for drunk driving on the base where I was working, and I got banned for driving again. And, you know, the fellow who was in charge of the base, he actually read the Bible to me about drunkards and whores. I thought, this guy is crazy. And then I realized I was in trouble. And the morning after what I hope is my last night before is the 20th of July, 1993, I did wake up in my own bed, which was a bonus. And I was alone, which was a bigger bonus. But the bed was wet and I was still dressed from work, and all of that is by normal. And I had a moment, you know, I thought about people in Alcoholics Anonymous and the hideous four horsemen and terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. And I thought, God, you're so scary. And that morning, I knew who they were. And my heart broke, not because I can't drink. I drink with the best of them. But that morning, I realized I couldn't drink safely. I did not care when I was unpredictable to you. That morning, I realized I'd become unpredictable to me. And I did the only thing I knew what to do. I called English Speaking AA. And I ended up in a home group in Hunsbrück, Holland, and a sponsor who frightened me. And if you're new and you're frightened of your sponsor, hold on to that. Fear kept me sober for a long time because I just thought she'd hunt me down like a dog, you know. And she was the service sponsor from hell. She volunteered me for everything. She dragged me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she gave me hope. You know, I said to her one day, you know, I'm wasting your time and mine because I always drink. And she said, well, if you always drink and we don't drink tonight, if you can really put step 6 and 7 practical application in your life, you will no longer have the excuse of I've always been and I'm always going to be. I've always been a loser, I'm always going to be a loser. You don't get to do that anymore because step 6 and 7 let you change. And she gave me hope, and it changed everything. And, you know, my sponsor always talks about if you're sitting here with us, there are 10 people digesting their dinner better, 10 people sleeping better. And I have to tell you, my mom was one of the 10. You know, I mean, I called my mom collect from foreign jails, and she could do nothing. And, you know, you get a chance in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been given the chance to be the daughter my mother deserves instead of the one she had, you know. We thought she was forgetful, and we found out it's a lot worse than that. And I'm so grateful I got to be the daughter she deserved, because now she probably wouldn't remember, but, you know, I get to be of service today. You know, and I have a great relationship with my mom, only because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, and Al-Anon, thank you. She went to Al-Anon. But, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a life I didn't know I wanted. And I travel a lot for work, and I'm doing the best I can. And, you know, I'm really... Well, Sharon talks about Chuck C. and rubbing out the record. I'm really trying to rub out the record. And, you know, my mom got pulled over by the police, and they called me. And my poor mother was mortified. And I said to her, look, it's going to take a long time before those scales are balanced, you know. And she laughed, and the next week she caught herself being forgetful, and she said, I hope you don't have to put me in a mental hospital, because those are scales I really don't want to balance. I thought, she's quick tonight, you know. But I tell you, I truly love Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new, I came to a lying bedwetting whore, and somewhere along the way you've turned me into a good friend, a loving and monogamous wife, and a true daughter to my mother. I thank you.
And our main speaker tonight is Rosie T.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Rosie, and I am an alcoholic. Hello, Zoom. I want to thank Mary for inviting me to come and share with you guys tonight. And all the hosts and everybody else that's involved in getting this beautiful meeting together. I love this room also. My first time coming back to PG was a couple weeks ago. And I lucked out because we heard Tim Kruger share and what a magnificent talk he did. And I got to tell you that it felt really weird being in this room and not in the old one, you know, after COVID and after death. And, you know, it's just, it felt really weird. And 2 weeks later, here I am in front of all of you guys. I'm hoping that this COVID thing, it's just passing through. It's going to be just maybe uncomfortable for this month. Cross your fingers. Let's be safe, because I do not want to go back to Zoom. My sobriety date is July 5th of 1992. My home group is the Bellflower Big Book Group. We meet on Monday nights at 7:30. And my sponsor is Sharon Brooks, and she's on Zoom tonight. Hi, sponsor. I love you. And you know, Johnny and Larry are at that Grateful Dead concert tonight. And I guess Keith is with them. That joke came from Nancy Morris. Not my fault. My grand sponsor has the best sense of humor ever. She is the funniest lady I know. And I thought I was funny. But anyway, I am here to share with you guys in the next few minutes how I drank and what happened to me that I came to AA, and what my life is like today and what I'm like today. So I want to welcome the newcomers. I didn't see a lot of hands in the room, and you know, but I did see one or two. I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you did not raise your hand and you are new, I'd like to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope you get to hear something that'll keep you coming back. And if you don't, please go to other meetings. I'm a total byproduct of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything that is decent and good in my life, I learned it here with you guys. I'm growing old with you guys, you know, and I love Alcoholics Anonymous too, Hilda. Thank you so much for your talk, and John as well, and prayers for your mom, Hilda. My mom died of dementia and Alzheimer's approximately about 14 years ago, so I know what that feels like. But I also know what the gift is of Alcoholics Anonymous to have given us the opportunity to be daughters, you know, and active members in our family, and to be able to make amends and to have those sweet relationships mended. You know, God, my mom loved Alcoholics Anonymous just because, you know, you gave me back to her. The last 15 years of her life, I treated my mom like she was a queen, because she was. You know, my mom had it really bad. My dad died of alcoholism at the age of 49, and my mom had 5 kids under 18 when my dad died. I was born and raised in Nicaragua, and my mom, 11 months after my dad died, we had a huge earthquake in Nicaragua, and we lost everything. We became from low middle class to very poor, and that's how my mom got to the States. And I can tell you that my mom never remarried, because she never wanted to give us a stepdad, is what she said. And she worked 2 or 3 jobs, you know, just to maintain. And at one given time, I lived in a one studio apartment with her, you know, where she babysat 12 kids. And with all of that, my false pride and my ego and you know, everything that I was ashamed of my mom growing up. Ashamed because she was fat. Ashamed because she was uneducated. And I secretly just had all these resentments, you know, because when she left Nicaragua, she left me, and I was there for a year, and she never said goodbye. I was very young. She didn't sit me to explain to me what was going on. In my country, and I don't know if in your family too, we never really sit down with the youngsters to explain or to talk to them. We don't talk to youngsters like human beings. And so there was just a lot of confusion. I felt abandoned, you know. And that's not why I started drinking. I came here when I was 11 years old. I did not speak any English. I came straight to live in El Segundo. And I was the only non-speaking English person in that school. And you talk a lot about feeling different. Well, I was different. I was the only brown child at that time. And I can tell you that I always wanted to be something I wasn't. So I was very a nuisance and you know, trying to join in, you know, people that didn't want me around. My mom used to dress me with bell bottoms when they were not in style, you know, high waters when they were not in style, and I was trying to fit in with all my might. So by the time I got my first drink, my first drunk is at the age of 16. We talk a lot about loving the effect produced by alcohol. I loved everything that relates to alcohol. I love the taste. I love the color. I love the glasses. I have never been a stay-at-home secret drinker. I like partying. I like getting it on. And that's all I needed to add alcohol to this, because I just took off. Man, I had a blast for years. I was the kid in school who had the bottle of vodka in the locker. I smoked cigarettes in the bathroom. I smoked my pot in the parking lot. I stand before you. If you're new here and you hear a lot of stories that you don't relate to because your case is different, I know I sponsor a lady that, you know, for a long time, you know, she thought that her case was different because she hadn't gone to jail, an institution, and, you know, she's this big shot at her company. And so, you know, she had a hard time, you know, staying. And I think right now, today, she's coming to believe little by little, you know, that this, you know, that she's an alcoholic. It took me a while to come to believe to my innermost self that I suffer from alcoholism, you know, and this happens when we quit drinking. And I didn't know that. So, you know, through all my high school years, I was drunk. I have a feeling I'm going to be going back and forth. If I miss anything, call me and I'll explain it to you. But through all of my high school, I loved the effect produced by alcohol, and I loved to party, and I loved ditching parties. I barely graduated high school. I found drugs. I loved drugs. I had an overdose at the age of 19. I don't know if it was Tim who talked about Gramigny and cocaine. Oh, my God. Love that. And I remember that I had a fake ID. I don't know where I got a fake ID. I just always had a fake ID. I never had any problems getting into any bars, any disc. I'm a bar drinker. I love dancing. I used to fancy myself the salsa queen of Los Angeles, you know, but I've seen some videos. I was no salsa queen, you know. I used to say Celia Cruz had nothing on me, you know, but that's just my head. I used to think that, you know, whenever I walked into the nightclub, you guys parted ways and allow me in, you know. That's how it seemed to me, you know. And you talk about being in full flight from reality. And after that overdose at the age of 19, I just was smoking pot and drinking booze. And I never put the alcohol down. My mom allowed me to drink at home as well. And so, you know, there were times where I would just puke in the closet, and it was my mom cleaning me up. I would puke in bed. You know, I slept in the same bed with my mom until I was 19 years old, and that's because we didn't have an extra bed or the room to have. And so I was drunk. I was drunk 16, 17, 18, and I was puking, you know, on my mom. And God bless her, she never found Al-Anon, thank God. And I had a good time, you guys. I had a car that drove me to different nightclubs, different nights, all by itself, you know. If it was a Wednesday night, we'd go to the Quiet Cannon, and on Thursday nights, we'd go to the Grand in downtown L.A., and the Friday night at the Mayan, and on Sunday nights, we'd always go to Stephen's Steakhouse. I hear an, oh, yeah. And I just had a really good time, and I haven't gotten caught with a DUI yet, you know, and I always say the yets, because I haven't arrived anywhere. I don't have this licked. I haven't, you know, I'm not stamped, cured. So I always have those yets. And from the ages of 19 to 25, I would get home about 1 o'clock in the morning. I would get up at 5, go to the gym, go to work. I've always worked. That work ethic probably came from my mom. I don't know where else I would, you know, think that I'd, you know, be showing up to work every day. I didn't know that I can go to a recovery home or a rehab center for years, you know. I just went to work, and I would go to work drunk, hungover, clusters of pizza on my sweater, because Grandma Nan pizza didn't work too well the night before, but I would show up to work, and I would score my dope just before getting into work. And to me, it seems like, well, through inventories, right? Because I don't come to AA knowing my story. I have come to realize that I've always had people saving me, you know, always people around me trying to clean me up and save me from getting in trouble, you know, because I remember that time that I showed up with puke on my sweater to work, I had the girls, you know, change me, and they hid me from the boss, and I remember having this kind of personnel, you know, at hand, and I don't know why, and I'm not even going to pretend to want to find out why. You know, why me, why not you, who cares? I am here, and I'm a full-blown alcoholic, and at the age of 25, I found myself hanging around with the same people in the same, you know, playgrounds, and, you know, there's nothing more horrible than to, you know, try to not do something and continue to hang around with the same crowds, you know? I'm a true believer that if you hang around the hair shop, you're eventually going to get a haircut, you know, true believer of that. I become what I'm around. And in AA, if I hang around with the people that are doing this thing, you know, minimal, I become that person that I'm only going to do it minimal. You know, I'm very blessed to live with a sober member, active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I love my husband, and we have an AA home, and we share this deal day in and day out, and I am so grateful. He's a far better member than I am, and grateful through all this COVID thing, you know, because I understand we get crazy. I got crazy during COVID, you guys. The first few months, I just, nobody was doing it right, and I was going to let you know about it. And thank God that I've been trained in Alcoholics Anonymous to tell my sponsor everything. You know, from the very first time I had a sponsor, I was over a year sober to this date. Man, I call my sponsor and I tell her everything. Whenever I fall short, and I tell her the good, the bad, and the ugly, and I believe that practice has saved my life. You know, because when I'm calling my sponsor and telling her how all of your secretaries are not doing Zoom right, and how, you know, why are they doing this? God, man, it was just crazy, and I'm getting resentful and restless and irritable and discontent, and I'm ranting, and, you know, all I heard my sponsor said at the other end of the phone, it's, that's enough! You know, and if you know Sharon Brooks, she's not loud. You know, she's just very, you know, sweet. But you, God bless her heart, and like that startled me. It kind of woke me up, you know. And then I started doing a 10-step, and you know, realized how all my defects of character have come alive. And I got to tell you that the older that I've become here in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more human I've become. You know, there is no way of doing this deal perfectly, and I'm coming to believe that I'm just as flawed as anybody else in here, and that I'm not doing this deal right day in and day out. And my defects of characters, I grabbed a glimpse of my character defects this past couple of years, and this past year has been a tough year for me. And I got to tell you that I know fear. I know fear well. I can see it and I can feel it. And the only thing that's kept me somewhat sane and somewhat joyful in my life is the routine of meetings that I do with you guys. This is why it's very important that if you're new here, you know, there is a good recipe here to stay sober. If you're not so new and you're finding it very difficult to stay, there is a recipe. You know, you need a sponsor that's going to show you the way. You need a home group where you're going to get commitments at, and you're going to be active, and you're going to be visible. Because I become what I'm around, if I am not visible in AA, it's so easy for me to, you know, just go in the back. In the beginning of the Zoom, I was not showing you my face, and I could tell you a whole bunch of reasons why I wasn't showing you my face. You know, anonymity was on the top of it. You know, but what was I doing? I was lifting weights while you were speaking at your meetings. You know? And then I was feeling, you know, disconnected. You know, I was not feeling a part of, you know. And it took a member of my home group that, you know, shared about making a commitment of showing your face on Zoom. You know, that was her commitment. And I heard that, and I liked it, you know. And I started, you know, being a member, being an active member even on Zoom. And so I learned from all of you guys, and I learned from all of your mistakes and all of your success. I'm a people watcher. You know, I've come to understand that this is not, you know, where we come and become popular. This is a matter of life and death, because it is. Because when it's your turn in the barrel, and I know that a lot of you guys have had your turn in the barrel here. You know, I'm not, you know, so far removed. I know that when we are suffering and we're going through something, you know, thank God that we don't have to do this alone. And it doesn't matter that if you're not new today, you can be an old timer in this room dying of alcoholism. You know, reach out. We are waiting for your phone call. We are waiting to take a little walk with you. We don't have to do this alone. And I've learned that. In 29 years, I've learned that this last couple of years. Kid you not, I'm a little slow. I digress. Where was I? I was Quiet Canyon Wednesday night. So here I am, between the ages of 25 to 29, you guys. I'm, you know, getting home at 1 o'clock in the morning, getting up at 5, going to the gym, because if I worked out, everything was okay. I went to work, went by my mom's house, you know, because I'm a good daughter, is what they said. You know, what a great daughter you are. You visit your mom every day. But what I was doing at my mom's house is was taking a nap and getting a little hot plate of food. Then I would go to the college, because I did manage to go to, you know, five years to a college to get a two-year degree. And even then, I failed business law and algebra, you know. Well, algebra I didn't fail, but I had my niece take my final. Don't judge me. And that's how I did that. And I would, you know, get home at, you know, go to the nightclub and get home at 1 o'clock. And I did that for a few years. And I got to tell you that when I look back, I hope and I pray that that was my bottom. You know, we talk a lot about bottoms here in Alcoholics Anonymous, but the reality of things is a bottom is when you call it, it is. You know, you don't have to go down all the way. I don't have the experience of, you know, we were doing our grateful list this morning, and one of my girls was, you know, being grateful for not peeing in the streets anymore and not sleeping in stolen cars. That's not my story. You know, but it could be my story. You know, I was homeless, but I've always had, you know, my family members and sisters that took me in, you know. But I was never homeless underneath the bridge, you know, but that's a yet for me. You know, I got to understand that my alcoholism, I got it treated, you know, and I come here to get it treated with you guys. So I quickly checked up with the drug dealer guy, and I started drinking on a daily basis. I started drinking in the morning. I was doing drugs on a daily basis. You guys, I've lost every decent job that I've had, and I ended up working in downtown L.A. at a ballroom hostess place where men come in to dance with women there. My job was to hire the women that work there at night, and my job was between 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. I score my dope in that place, and I drank every day, and I could no longer drive from downtown L.A. to Downey. I lived in Downey at that time without, you know, getting off the freeway or you know, getting a pull from that bottle or a hit from whatever it is that I was doing. I could no longer go 20 minutes without taking a drink, and that's how I lived. If you would have asked me if I had a problem with alcohol, I would have said no, because I didn't know. I don't know anything about alcoholism. You know, I thought maybe I had problems with drugs. And what happened, you guys, is that at the age of 29, my brother got back from a trip to Nicaragua, and he brought back some rum. We have the best rum in Nicaragua. And I had just gotten back from the Galapagos Island in Ecuador, and I brought back 5 bottles of sugarcane syrupy, thick alcohol. I don't know if you guys have ever had anything like that, but I talk about it all the time and my mouth waters. I mean, it is the best thing that there is. It's really smooth going down, very smooth coming up, but once it stays, it's the best thing you've ever had, I swear to God. And my brother and I started drinking about from noon until about 9:30. It's a Sunday. I know this because I ended up at Stephen's Steakhouse that Sunday night. And my brother totaled his van that night. He hit the center divider on the 101 and hit the wall on the right, on the 101 and the 5 freeway, and hit the center divider and lost the wheel. And he ended up on the right-hand side without hitting anybody. You know, the following morning, he called me up and asked me to come and help him pick up his van. His van was about $45,000 worth. We took a lot of camping trips in that van. And we came home with $50 in the back seat of that van. I looked at the van, and I looked at my brother, and I couldn't believe he walked away from that accident. That van was completely destroyed. Today, I know why he walked away from that accident. He got sentenced to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And my brother went to his first meeting and his second meeting, and by the third meeting, you had him. My brother became your biggest cheerleader, and he couldn't wait to tell me about it. He would call me up at that looser job that I had every morning after his morning attitude adjustment meeting, and he would tell me everything you said. He started telling me about how he drank and how he felt and passing out and the blacking outs and how my dad died of alcoholism and how he had other kids that I didn't know that my dad had. He's just started, you know how we are when we're new. You know, you ask a newcomer how they're doing, and, you know, they barely come up for air, you know, and then he just went off. And he also came home and gave all the siblings big books. We're all girls. He's the only guy. And then he started talking about God. You know, God. We're Catholics. We know God. You know, and we just started making fun of him, you know, and we go to Palm Sunday once a year, and so we started calling him Brother Mario, you know, and I swear to God, he was just lit. And I'm at the other end of that phone every morning, and I am crying. I want to tell my brother where I'm at. I want to tell my brother how unhappy and how I am drinking every day and what I'm doing every day, but the words don't come out. I'm the youngest of seven in my family, and I'm not used to sharing my dirty laundry with anybody, especially family. We don't tell family anything, you know, and I just couldn't tell my brother where I was at. My brother would tell me, you know, you had to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. You're going to love AA. And I don't know why my brother would say that I would love Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was on a Tuesday night. My brother had taken a trip, and I ended up missing you guys. And I don't know that I'm missing you, you know, but I don't understand any other way, you know, why I would go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, about not hearing from you guys. You guys call this the language of the heart. After a few days after my brother had gone, you know, I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in Downey, the second chance meeting on Tuesday night. I don't know how I got there. I don't know if I called 411, the yellow pages. I have no idea how I got there, but I remember that I waited for your meeting to be over because I was embarrassed of walking in. And my brother told me to go to the literature table, and at the literature table I would find the directory, when that's the listing of all the meetings where we're at, you know. And I remember walking in after your meeting, because I was embarrassed. It was across the street from a bar I used to drink at, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, somebody from the bar is going to watch me, you know. And mind you, I'm a peer. I pee all over your front lawns any day, but here I am embarrassed to walk into a meeting of A&A, you know. And so I went up to the literature table, and Marguerite was standing next to that table after the meeting. And I don't know about you guys, but, you know, it took me a while before I stayed after the meeting. You know, it was like, amen, and I was out of there. And Marguerite was standing there, and I proceeded to ask her for a directory. And she gave me a directory, and I gave her $5 because I knew you poor people needed the money. And I showed up to you guys with my black leather miniskirt, my high thigh boots, my little tube top, because I was going to go dancing, you know. And I'd been drinking hard liquor beer back for the last 3 years, and I was a little chunky. You know what I mean? I weighed about 165 pounds. My chin was touching my boobs. I looked like a bullfrog, you know. And then I had no toenails due to malnutrition, you know. And this is before acrylics, you know. And that's a vision for you. And I swear to God, man, I was going to go dancing, and I just, I took one look around, and all these beautiful ladies there with their beehives and their blonde hair and beautiful jewelry, and I already told you what I, you know, look like, and I thought to myself, here's another bunch of people I don't fit in with, you know. And I remember taking the directory and waiting for Tuesday, because I thought you only met on Tuesdays, and I ended up in Norwalk, which is only 5 minutes from Downey, you know. But, you know, God bless Alcoholics Anonymous that has so many meetings. We live in Los Angeles, where we can go to meetings every day anywhere, you know, and thank God that we get to find where we fit in, you know, because I fit in this little meeting. It was a participation meeting, and it was like a biker meeting, and all of you guys were like tatted down and a little dirty, and I remember thinking, you poor people need some help. And I swear to God, man, this is who you guys have behind here tonight. And I sat there for a minute, and I heard that your treasurer guy had gone to prison by his own admission. You know, and I'm thinking, man, you guys are some kind of stupid. You know, you've got the guy that's telling you that he went to jail, you know, taking your money, you know. And I thought, God, man, you guys really need me, you know. And I stayed there for a minute, and the old timers, I love old timers in AA that don't wait to be asked for anything. You know, they just asked me if I could help them make coffee, because they needed a coffee maker, and that only reiterated that you needed my help. So I stayed making coffee, made the best coffee that you guys have ever had, and I'm watching your literature, your treasurer guy, and within 3 months, you must have found out that I was a bookkeeper by trade because you made me your secretary, and I intuitively knew you wanted me to audit the guy that was still your treasurer. And I started, man, recounting the tickets and watching your money. And in my head, I was thinking, you're keeping my brother sober. The least I can come and do for you guys is watch your money. You know, this is all in my head. Full of pride, full of ego. You know, I am different than you guys. My case is different. And I stayed with no sponsor because my case is different. I haven't gone to jail yet. I haven't done a lot of the yets that you guys were talking about, you know, and I'm thinking step one, two, or three apply to me, but an inventory, not really, because I'm a good girl, you know. Everything that I just shared with you guys, I don't come to AA knowing. I know that some of you guys come and you guys know exactly where you're at. My head was in full flight from reality when I got to you guys. I could not tell you anything that I just shared with you guys. And so, you know, I sat there and I'm thinking, you know, I'm just here to help you guys out. And thank God that, you know, I did not use or drink between meetings. That's very important, you people. It's important for us not to drink, you know. So I detoxed with my Lanta. My sister thought I had gas and weight problems. She gave me my Lanta for my first 90 days. And I can tell you that it works, you know, because I remember being, you know, if I smoked cigarettes, I got sick. If I drank coffee, I got sick. I was sick all the time. And I had that fear for days that didn't leave me, you know, when I was new. And I had the nightmares and the sweats at night. And, you know, my Lanta seemed to calm me down, you know. And thank God that I didn't have to drink or use in between that meeting. Because when I was around 9 months dry, God disguised himself as a cute white boy, you know. And I've always had this thing with the cute, you know, white boys. And I married one, you know, and the blue-eyed and beautiful as he is, and he's on soon, and so here, you know, there's God, you know, disguising himself as a cute guy, and he invites me to go play volleyball at the speaker meeting in Lakewood, and I swear to God, you know, it's like I lost my bloat, I'm ready to go play volleyball, you know what I mean, Tina? You know, and I'm wearing my little hot short shorts and my little tube top, and, you know, let's go play some ball, you know, and I would, you know, have to stay for the speaker, because if you don't stay for the speaker, you look bad. I don't like looking bad. You know, once in a while, I'd bring cookies and throw it at you to make you believe that I was a member, and, you know, and I'm there to play volleyball, you know, and sure enough, a couple weeks after that, Betty Garcia came and shared at the podium. I've never gone to speaker meetings before, and she stood behind the podium, and she shared from here, and she said the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer, and at the end of her talk, she recited by the touch of the master's hand, and I don't know why it moved me that night. I swear that I was not in that meeting looking for a sponsor. I was not looking to change my life. I was not looking to enhance my relationship with that higher power, because I thought I had a relationship with the higher power. I did not have a relationship, you know, as I know it today, and I followed this lady into Torrance, you know, my life has never been the same since. You know, I sat next to this lady and she asked me if I've ever taken an inventory. I said I didn't know what that was. And she got all excited, you know, and then she started reading the big book out loud to me. She would take me down the street on that bench from the TLC and she'd open that book. You know, Terry got to remember this, you know, we were sponsored by Betty together. And she started reading the big book out loud to me, you know, and like I couldn't read, you know, and I used to think, this lady, why is she reading it out loud and why is she repeating herself? You know, she used to, you know, read things like, you know, selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of all your troubles. And then she'd stare at me for 30 seconds. I'm like, who the hell reads that way, man? You know, it's like, oh, my God, this lady's crazy. And, you know, I thought it. I didn't say anything, you know. And she just, you know, kept reading. And she told me what to do with my inventory. She wanted the resentment, you know, the sex and the fear and the secrets. And it was in the secrets that she had me, you guys. You know, it wasn't, you know, it was the nickel and dime stuff that kept me feeling apart from, you know. And it was me being bullied at 14 years old, trying to commit suicide at 10, you know, being a wetback in this country, you know, all these secrets. This being tape, huh? I'm a U.S. citizen today. Did you get that? I know where I'm at. I know how you guys are. And so, you know, it was just those little nickel and dime stuff, you know. And and I gave my fifth step to this lady, and I gave it to her. I gave her everything. And this is how I've been trained in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've told, from the very beginning, I've told everything. And my sponsor told me what to do with a sixth and seventh, and I knew exactly how, why my brother had given us big books. You know, I felt like I was going to be the next Mother Teresa of Calcutta. You know, I just felt, you know, just clean, you know, and that lasted for about a week. And because then she said, you know, make a list of the people you owe amends to, you know, and I made a list and I gave it to her, and the following week, and she looked at the list and she says, where is that employer of yours that you embezzled $7,000? And I says, what? She says, you told me on your fifth step that you had embezzled $7,000, and I know the amount because I filed taxes on it. You know, I know. And so she said, you know, and she shows me the book, and I hate it when sponsors are, you know, they go to the book and they tell you where it says, you know, if you're willing to go to any length, sometimes we may face jail, you know. And so she showed me that part, and I'm going, man, this lady's crazy, you know. I ran back to my Downey meetings, you know, and I started talking to the old timers there, and I would say, you know, can you believe my sponsor wants me to go pay $7,000, you know, and I'm poor. I already got a different job, but, you know, I'm still pretty poor. My car is 10 years old, and it's farting and smoking at every corner, you know, and you guys gave me an H&I panel in Skid Row that I had for my first 11 years of sobriety, and I'm thinking, there's no way I'm going to pay $7,000, you know, and I'm waiting for the old timers to tell me, you know, don't do what your sponsor says, and thank God that nobody did. Thank God that the people that I went to told me that I needed to start trusting somebody, and the sponsor was a good way to begin. You know, thank God that nobody said anything like that to me, you know, everybody said, you know, do what your sponsor say, you know, she's got your back. And I didn't like that answer at all. I reverted to my childhood God, and I started, you know, talking to God and saying, you know, if you don't make me do this amends, I'm going to go feed the homeless for a whole year, you know. And I started going to Fifth and Central with my nieces and nephews in the car. We started making hot dogs and burgers, and I started passing them out for about 3 months, you know. And by this time, you know, I'm take a real lunch because I'm working at a real company, you know. And I, at one of these lunch times, I opened up the other big book that I like reading once in a while, and it opened up to the page where it says, before you come to my altar, make sure your debts are paid. And I was screwed, you know. And so, you know, I got a down payment of $300 and a payment planned, and a lot of prayer. You know, my sponsor told me to pray until I became willing. And that still applies today, too. You know, sometimes I'm not willing to take direction right away, and she'll ask me to, you know, pray until I become willing. And that worked, because I continue to pray, and I finally made the appointment with this guy. I met him at Foxy's in Downey. It was a restaurant there. It's no longer there. But I met him on a Friday morning at 6 o'clock, and I told him what I had done, that I stole the money, and, you know, and this is easier here 27 years later, you know, in at Pacific Group, you know. But I was scared to death. I thought I was going to go to jail, and you know, he looks at me like I have two heads, you know, and I tell him, you know, that I had stolen that money, but that I'm willing to pay back, you know. And I put the cash on the table, and he looks at me, and he looks at the cash, and he says, Rosie, I can't take your money. You, out of anybody, knows how many times my kids have broken into my own home, and they've never sat me down to tell me the truth. You, out of anybody, knows how many times my wife has been missing in action, and she never said anything to me. You know, please take that money and put it to good use for the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't mind, I'll take a big book for my wife, and you and I can work something out in form of work, you know. And I was able to go back to the same company, same office, same computers, to close out his books for him for the following 2 years, you know, with no pay, to try to repay a debt and to try to make some, you know, my wrong right, you know. And I know it doesn't mean anything to you guys, but I can tell you that those actions and those amends have put myself back together. From where I come from, you guys, a little girl from Nicaragua, you know, poor, grown up with outhouses, you know, with no dad since she was 8 years old, coming into the States, you know, from where I come from, where I stand, all of my goal, all I ever wanted to be in my life was to be white. That was my dream when I came to America. I thought that the moment that I crossed over the border, everything was going to be white. You know, I don't know why I thought that way. I don't know why, you know, I equated beauty with white for some reason. I never fit in my own skin. That is all I ever wanted to be. You know, and look at me now. I fit in my own skin comfortably most of the time. I live a life, and I know that every speaker that comes here every Wednesday tells you, I live a life beyond my wildest dreams. I mean, look at Tim. You know, what a life. We get every speaker, most of the speakers that come here, and they tell you that. And that's because I live a full, rich life. You know, and it's not the wealth. I am not talking money and material. That's awesome. I am talking about feeling whole inside, feeling like I can look at you in the eye, like I don't owe you anything, you know, because I try to maintain a sense of currency, you know, in my life today. And you gave me that. You gave me that through the amends. The amends is not something that we do and forget about it. We continue to make living amends. I flew to Florida to make amends to a niece that I had been very mean when she was growing up, you know, as a little girl. And you know, my sponsor has taught me to ask them after each amends, have I left anything out? Is there anything that I can do for you? This young lady went to town with me. You know, she just started telling me, you know, you're making amends for this, but do you remember you did this? And you remember, you know, and I remembered. I remembered once she started saying it. I didn't remember it when I wrote it on my fifth step, because, you know, there's a lot of things that I didn't remember, but when she said it, I remembered. I knew exactly what she was talking about, you know, and she didn't take my amends, you know, she's just, you know, told me to go away, you know, and I came home and I told my sponsor that the amends didn't work, and she says, wait a minute, young lady, we are responsible for clearing the wreckage of our side of the street, and that's what you've done. Now we move on to making living amends, and I can tell you that for years, I sent Jackie birthday gifts and Christmas cards and little gifts for her little girl, and sometimes I would get those back because, you know, she wouldn't share her address with me, and I would send it to my sister to give to her, and you know, once in a while, she would send me a hate email. I don't know what to do with a hate email. I would forward it to my sponsor because it was her idea anyway, right? Left to my own devices, I send you a virus, you know? Cut that crap out, you know what I mean? It's like, you don't like me, I delete you from my phone, you know? Give me a second. And that's how I operate, you know? I don't stay anywhere. I don't communicate effectively. I don't talk about things, you know? I'm out of here, you know? Even today, I have my sneakers outside the door. You know, I watch my sneakers outside the door because in my head, I'm always running. You know, thank God that Alcoholics Anonymous has put me in the middle of my home group, in the middle of four committed meetings that I attend a week. You know, the best thing, the most valuable things that I have in my life today is my word and my time. If I tell you that I'm going to do something, I do it, no matter what, whether I feel like it or not. You know, and I feel that that's very rich, you know, to have in my life. This young lady called me up about 14, 15 years ago, and I heard her voice, and I thought the hate was coming one more time. And I heard her say, you know, I'm calling you to make amends. I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous at 9 months. And one of the things that I wanted to thank you the most, she said, was that I know exactly where you've been all this time. I have all the letters you've ever sent to me, and I knew that you've been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous all this time, and for that I'm truly grateful, she said. You know, she went on not to stay sober. You know, she lost her little kids, and Jackie today is 9 years sober. You know, she's an active member of her group, and we have a good relationship today, and I would have missed it all. You know, that resentment that I had with my mom, you know, I made two amends with my mom, and I can tell you that my mom lived a good life her last 15 years. You know, we celebrated her belly button birthday at my house, and we had a talent show where my husband, you know, who's a gringo guy, would, you know, dance to the marimba in his guayabera and sombrero, and my mom loved it. You know, my mom gave me my cake at my Downey Thursday night meeting for years, and she would cook for you guys because she was just so happy that you gave her little girl back to her. You know, I am the youngest of seven. I've been called la loca all of my life, you know, by all my siblings and all my family. Nobody respected me, you know, and today they call me. They call me to check things out. They call me and ask me for advice. They call like I know something, right? You know, I tell them that I do know. I give them an answer all the time. You know, and then I'm talking to my sponsor, you know, but I would have missed it all, you guys. I'm going to continue to keep coming back. I hope you do the same. If you're suffering tonight, if you have anything going on in your life, let us in. You don't have to do this all by yourself. If you're new tonight, grab a sponsor. Thank you for letting me share. Love you guys.